Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Ryan Seacrest here. Every great barbecue has one secret ingredient. Patience. You do a little, and you wait a little. And while your dinner does its thing, you got a few minutes to yourself, right? Well, kick back with a little Chumba Casino. A flip and a spin. Who knows? Maybe even a login bonus. It is the perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This is continuing live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
You okay there, Mr. Whitney?
Yes, yeah, got caught up on the court.
Must be contagious.
Where were we?
All right.
Okay, at the okay seven here?
Well,
I think the beginning of the answer would be...
Yeah, why don't you go back to what line, page 106, line 20, if you could start there. Where your answer begins, sure?
Sure, okay. Sure, I'll try. First, and these are within the bounds of medical and scientific certainty. Two, that her medical approach to this case diverged from the accepted standard of the hospital treating physicians conducting an appropriate differential diagnosis in which all alternatives are seriously considered and honestly represented.
Okay.
Three, that her practice with regard to this child violated the standard of care that had to do with careful and sympathetic attention to a child's presenting complaints, past medical history, and current hospital course with regard to pain, distress, ruptured family relationships, and her request for analgesic medication, where Dr. Smith, with cruelty, with opacity of sympathy, and with a propensity to blame not only the mother as a perpetrator, but the child as a willing and intentional collaborator, rather than to understand the child as a suffering individual supported by loving and caring persons. Is that bottom in or no? 20?
That doesn't look like it.
It's out.
All right. And then the next question on 108, line 9, as to what you believe the deviations from the standard of care were.
Answer, yes, correct. No.
Yeah. Okay.
A second, with regard to the two Hippocratic ethical canons, principally, first of all, to do no harm.
Continue.
Principally, first, to do no harm, at no point did it appear to her that her actions, her inactions, her interventions to, quote, wean the child from medication, to separate the child from life-supporting devices to enable nutrition, for example, might actually harm the child. There was none of this. There was no consideration, no capacity to, on her part, to take a critical perspective on her own work and not inflict harm.
And then here.
Those, in sum, are my opinions.
All right, now we're turning to page 117, beginning at line 9. Okay, do you recall, by reviewing Dr. Wassenaar's, first of all, did you review Dr. Wassenaar's medical records as it relates to Beata?
I reviewed his medical records and his deposition, and he had positive things to say about Beata, yes.
Okay, but you actually reviewed the medical records that pertained to Beata versus Maya.
I don't remember the distinction. It's been some time since I looked at the medical records of his.
Top of page 118. Okay. Well, he was Beata's primary care physician, was he not?
Correct.
Turning to page 120, line 19. Just staying with paragraph 6 here. What evidence can you point to that supports the proposition that Dr. Smith acted as a treating physician as it relates to Maya Kowalski?
Well, I point out in the summary that Dr. Smith's role included orchestrating the creation of a treatment team. She intervened consistently with regards to actions to be taken with regard to drugs that Maya was given to allay pain. to advise to support infusion of intravenous treatments, to involve herself directly in interdisciplinary discussions where she was represented as an authoritative participant in transmitting documents, texting back and forth in November with Dr. Powell Adiz, words to the effect, and this is number 11 in my affidavit. In her deposition of March 6, Dr. Smith testified she texted a number of messages to Dr. Powell Adiz and a number of communications with her during the time the child was in the hospital. I texted her, quote, probably already in progress, but I may get her off as many meds as possible. That was page 75, lines 5 to 25. And then on November 5th.
That was read incorrectly. You said, I may be.
That was.
Can you restart? I'm sorry. Line.
Where do you want me to start?
Line 12.
12?
Yeah.
Okay. During the time the child was in the hospital, I texted to her, quote, probably already in progress, but maybe get her off as many meds as possible. That was page 75, lines 5 to 12. Then on December 5th, 2016, when Dr. D's
November 5th.
Huh?
November 5th.
No, I'm sorry. November 5th, 2016, when Dr. D's texted to her, to Dr. Smith, for your information, I just went to see Maya. I watched her use her feet to push her several feet in her wheelchair in her room. My son was outside the room and I was trying to prevent him from coming in the room. She wanted to see him, so she inadvertently started coming to the door. She was distracted. I'm not even sure she realized she did it, but I didn't want to call attention to it, but I mentioned it to the nurse who also saw it earlier. And this is from Dr. Smith's March 6th deposition.
All right. So, doctor, you're referencing communications that she had with treaters at the hospital where she was being sheltered. Is that right?
My point is that this attending physician at the hospital was reporting information to Dr. Smith that went well beyond Dr. Smith's role as an evaluator. At this time, it's my understanding that there was a monitoring of this child in the hospital, and they were looking for any and all artifacts of falsification of medicalization. And on the child's part, misrepresenting her ambulation, her symptoms, her comfort, her ability to move around. Clearly, this was the hospitalist who were the attending inpatient physician members of this team communicating to Smith what she knew Smith wanted to know in her work as a colleague treater at the hospital. And similarly,
doctor, isn't that supposition on your part? Aren't you superimposing an assumption that Dr. Deese wanted to transmit information to Dr. Smith that Dr. Smith wanted to know? You have no way of knowing that. Is that correct?
In association with the communications on March 6, 2019, when Dr. Deese texted her with regard to Maya's persistent symptoms and efforts to ambulate.
All right. Dr. Neuberger, let me stay on task here. So as far as paragraph 6 goes, you render an opinion, and you offered some more here. As to that, you believe that Dr. Sally Smith acted as a treating physician on behalf of Maya Kowalski. Let me stick with that. You have not seen a single record anywhere in Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital medical chart that would reflect Dr. Smith entered an order regarding this child's care. Is that correct?
You mean like writing a written order?
Correct. And again, entering an order as a treater.
No. Very often, people are members of a treatment team, an interdisciplinary team of the kind that she helped or was ordered to take place. The orders typically are answered by the attendings and typically also seconded to residents and interns in training hospitals. This was, if you will, a teaching hospital. All of this is going forth under the banner of the great Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore, one of the most elite and justifiably prominent training institutions in the country. So the practice there doesn't involve the consultant's writing orders. She was a consultant actively involved in the care of this child and went beyond her role.
Doctor, is the answer to my question, though, did you find the only pending question is, is there any order that you found that Dr. Sally Smith entered regarding this child's care, one that she entered, one that she signed?
No, I didn't see it. But please understand, I did not see the whole compendium of orders in the typically in the nursing notes, there would be a compendium of doctor's orders. I was not given that to review. But on the other hand, this is manifestly obvious to me that she was a treating doctor.
Okay. So it was the same, very simple question. In anything you reviewed, did you see any progress note authored by Dr. Sally Smith in the medical chart of Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital? Doctor, this isn't meant to be a trick question. I will represent to you there is not one, but if you are aware of one, please let me know.
I don't recall seeing one, no.
Okay. Same thing as it relates to a consultation authored by Dr. Sally Smith, included in the Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital. As it relates to Maya Kowalski, you're not aware of one, correct?
Well, what I did see with regard to her participation in consultation was, under bullet 15 in my affidavit, I mentioned that she was called on short notice to attend case management meetings in which she had an instrumental attending role. For example, she received this text on January 10th, 2017 from Dr. Catherine Major, Alexis Major, at Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital. Hi, Sally, exclamation point. Quote, sorry this is short order, but there is a staff meeting with staff first from 3:30 p.m. today in the case management, close quote, / social work area office first floor, and then with father between 3:30 to 4 p.m. And this was from Sally Smith's deposition on March 6, 2020, and it was an exhibit to the deposition. So my point is that she may not have entered a consultation note on the record, but this shows without question that she was participating in consultation to the attendings as a member of that team. That's what...
But doctor, the answer to my question about whether or not...
That's what... Could you please let me finish my response?
Sure.
That's why, as a matter of urgency, for this physician, Dr. Catherine Alexis Major, to... at short notice, alert her to a meeting with staff. She wasn't there as an evaluator, Mr. Haskell, or an investigator. She was there as a member of the clinical team.
Okay, but doctor, my question.
That's...
First of all, let me ask you this. You don't even know, would it surprise you to know that Dr. Smith didn't even make that meeting that Dr. Major texted her about because she wasn't available?
To me, that's immaterial. What this shows is the perspective of the attending with regard to the need to have Smith there at the meeting, and not as an evaluator, but as a participant.
Okay. And as a participant, as a treater, I think my question to you was, you're not aware of any consultation note authored by Dr. Smith or consultation report authored by Dr. Sally Smith contained within the medical chart in Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital as it relates to Maya Kowalski. Is that correct?
I am not aware of one, no.
Turning to page 129, line 11. Okay. Number 7, you opine that Dr. Smith took on a proactive role in not just evaluating Maya for whether she was abusive, a child abuse victim, but also weighing in on making both diagnostic and treatment decisions. That's essentially part and parcel that falls under the umbrella of what we covered in 6. Is that correct?
Yes.
Page 139, line 3. Okay. Let's go. I think we're going to be able to kind of streamline through a lot of these paragraphs, but you've covered a lot of it already by way of what you've been talking about. So in large part, the basis for your opinion and criticism of Dr. Smith as it relates to her being a treater and involved in the care and treatment of Maya in terms of tangible evidence goes to the text messages and the telephone calls and that kind of thing that she had with the treaters at Johns Hopkins All Children's. Is that right?
No. She was an active and continuing participation in the care of this child. Yes, there are these things that have evidentiary significance, but if we are going to go through her report, there are multiple indications of her taking a prosecutorial role of gathering information within the hospital to support the proof that she was seeking that Beata was a perpetrator. And she was doing this as a member of the hospital team. She was not doing it as an evaluator in any reasonable interpretation of the word evaluator.
Okay. Well, I think one of the key terms that I just used in my question was tangible evidence that would support the basis, proof to be a basis for your opinion regarding Dr. Smith acting as a treater. And we covered the calls, we covered the texts, we also covered the lack of documents that I asked you about. What other tangible evidence can you point to that would support the basis of that opinion, doctor?
Well, if you jump ahead to number 16, with regard to Maya's central port, I want to be clear that when you have to infuse ketamine and other analgesics to a child screaming in pain, you can't do this through a peripheral vein. You have to have a central port. And Dr. Smith was, as I put it, intimately involved in the orchestrated effort to remove Maya's central port in late October and early November 2016. In fact, she advocated for the removal of the port over Maya's parents' objections. And I've got a reference to where that comes in. Quote, she was one of three physicians at the hospital, along with Dees and Hart, who pushed for the removal. Again, this advocacy and push for removal of a surgically installed medical implement went well beyond an evaluator or investigatory role. Investigators do not recommend or direct invasive procedures.
Turning to page 142, line 21. And doctor, you said you were going to try to find that for me, and I'm thinking you might have.
You're correct.
Okay, go ahead, doctor, please.
Bates number, PLT-030704, document name, hospitalist perform information, colon, Paola B. Dees, M.D., it reads. Addendum by Paola B. Dees, M.D., on Monday, October 31st, 2016, at 1520 Eastern Daylight Time. Quote, spoke with Dr. Hart from physiatry and Dr. Smith from CPT by via phone. Dr. Smith has reviewed essentially all of Maya's medical records, and there is no documented immunodeficiency. Maya apparently has taken to three different immunologists and had no documented concerns by these specialists. She had an EMG, that's an electromyogram, with NCV, that's a nerve conduction studies, at TGH, that's Tampa General, during her inpatient rehab stay. In fact, it was apparently noted in the records that Maya did not report pain during the procedure itself. She was prescribed IVIG, that's an intravenous immunoglobulin, by a physician in Orlando for diagnosis of RSD/CRPS, and began monthly infusions in April of this year. Based on this information, and here's the money part, I agree with Dr. Hart and Dr. Smith, we should proceed in removing Maya's port as there is no indication for us to have a CVL. That means central venous line.
Okay. And doctor, you would agree that that is a medical record authored by Dr. Dees, who was a practitioner at the hospital herself.
Yes.
And you didn't read Dr. Dees' deposition transcript. We've established that, right?
Correct.
And Dr. Dees made that decision, did she not, or at least she authored the report in which a decision concerning the removal of the port is addressed, correct?
My number 16 says, Dr. Smith was also intimately involved in the orchestrated effort to remove Maya's central port in late October and early November 2016. In fact, Dr. Smith advocated for the removal of Maya's port over Maya's parents' objections. She was one of three physicians at the hospital, along with Dr. Dees and Hart, who pushed for the removal. Again, this advocacy and push for the removal of a surgically installed medical implement went well beyond an evaluator or investigatory role. Investigators do not recommend or direct invasive procedures. If you read what I just sent you, there's a great deal of argument there from Dr. Smith to her two team colleagues with regard to what she found. And I put that in quotes in her investigation. She was apparently taken to three different immunologists, and they had no concerns. She had an EMG in the rehab stay, and it was negative. And it was apparently noted in the record that she didn't report pain for the procedure itself. She was prescribed intravenous immunoglobulin by a physician in Orlando for diagnosis of RSD/CRPS and began monthly infusions in April of this year. Based on this information, I agree with Dr. Hart and Dr. Smith we should proceed with removing Maya's port as there is no indication for her to have a central venous line.
Okay.
This is in support of my testimony, or to put it another way, this is the proof that she was part of this orchestrated effort.
Doctor, everything that you just read into the record from that note authored by Dr. Dees is nothing more than a communication between a treater at the hospital that has the ability to enter an order to remove the port and a consultant like Dr. Smith, who is providing input as the Child Protection Team Medical Director. Isn't that correct?
No.
How is that not correct, Doctor?
This was a team effort. and they were relying on Smith and Smith's interpretation of the medical history to inform the joint decision of this team, with Smith, as an attending physician at the hospital, pushing for the removal of the port. That's how I read this, and that will be my testimony at trial.
Okay. And, doctor, you're presupposing that Dr. Deese and Dr. Hart and the other good doctors at the hospital wouldn't have removed the port, absent any input from Dr. Smith, Dr. Sally Smith, anyway, right? You have no way of knowing that.
I don't know that, but it's immaterial, Mr. Haskell.
All right. So in the words you used in paragraph 16 in your affidavit, you say investigators do not recommend or direct. First of all, recommending is very different than directing, is it not?
Well, in this context, there is no question about the instrumental role.
No, doctor. My question is, there is a difference between a recommendation and a direction, is there not?
This is an interdisciplinary team in which she is an attending participant in the eyes of these other people. They are relying upon her perceptions, on her warped reading of the medical history, to inform their decision together to remove this port.
Turning to page 148, line 18. Okay, so it's your testimony then, because of what Dr. Smith gave in the input that Dr. Sally Smith provided, these doctors at the hospital chose to remove the port and did so based upon that recommendation and set aside their own professional judgment in the actual care and treatment of this child?
That's not what I'm saying at all, and you know that, Mr. Haskell. They're operating as a team, as a collegial treating physicians. That's how she's perceived. That's how the data she collected is weighed. They're relying on her to inform their judgment.
Who entered the order?
Clearly, they bought into it, but it wasn't Smith who's writing the order, but she sure is weighing in the orchestration of this potentially disastrous intervention.
What's the motivation for the intentional disastrous situation there?
I don't have a theory on that.
Okay. Well, to be intentional and disastrous, there's got to be some kind of motivation, does there not?
I'm saying intentional. I mean intentional in terms of actually conducting the removal of the port, and disastrous, in my opinion, in terms of the downside consequences for this girl who needs the intravenous globulin, who needs the infusion of the pain relief.
Based on what, doctor?
She's not faking it. Based on all the CRPS symptomatology that's been documented at this very time, which Smith couldn't even get her head around or wouldn't.
Doctor, you're not superimposing your opinions as to CRPS on other doctors at the hospital. You're not an expert on CRPS, correct?
To the contrary.
Turning to page 152, line 13. Well, she did have contact with Kirkpatrick, did she not?
She had some contact with Kirkpatrick, but as I read it, not especially substantive, and surely not reflected in her note with the substance that it deserved.
And you, in turn, had contact with Kirkpatrick and Hannah during a round table meeting, correct?
I do not recall the participants. I don't recall either of them by name as being present.
Page 158, line 8. You're not aware of any medical record anywhere that would reflect Dr. Smith entered an order, authored an order, consulted with, or provided any type of treatment or care or evaluation to Beata, correct?
My memory is that she interviewed Beata, but if memory serves, deceived her by not complaining what her role was. Volume 2.
Volume 2 from...
Give me 1 second.
Sure, no problem. September 30th, 2020.
Okay.
Sorry.
And beginning at page 176, line 6. Eli Herbert Neuberger, MD, a witness having been duly sworn to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, was examined and testified as follows. Good morning, doctor. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Well, thank you again for allowing us to kind of break that last time and get this completed today. I only reserved a few hours. I do not anticipate being terribly long, but again, that's an attorney telling you that in this particular case. We say that quite a bit, and who knows? But I could tell you I have a hard stop mid-afternoon, and I'm on Eastern time, and I don't anticipate going that long. So I will bounce around a little bit because I, if you recall, we kind of covered the majority of your opinions. Some of the latter ones we only loosely covered, and I'll fill in the gaps, okay?
Sure.
All right, thank you, Doctor. Housekeeping-wise, between the date of your the first part of your deposition last week and today, have you reviewed anything in addition to what we previously reviewed and discussed?
Yes.
What have you reviewed?
I reviewed 9 volumes of depositions, court proceedings, and clinical notes I've had in addition to telephone conversations.
Okay, so let's do this. Let's, first off, the additional materials. Did you ask for them or were they provided to you?
Both.
Okay, what did you ask for?
I can't recall. I was interested in anything that related to the substance of my deposition that went to Dr. Smith's and her colleagues' relationship at the hospital, specifically with regard to what I perceive as an instrumental role that she played in the hospital care of Hannah. Maya. I was concerned of who? Of the child in question. And I was as well interested in any court proceeding that demonstrated a similar involvement by her and also the instrumental involvement of people whom she represented herself to as a hospital physician. Additionally, I was interested in the current medical status of this child and to the extent to which her current medical status may have been affected by the work of Catherine Beatty, of Dr. Major, of Dr. Paola Dees, of other social workers, and the risk management department of this hospital. So I asked for materials that would better inform my opinion, and Attorney Whitney sent me this packet and also arranged for me to talk with this girl and her father and her pediatrician, who I saw, I believe, yesterday or the day before. So all of this went into my preparation for today's deposition.
Okay. So that sounds like a lot more material. I mean, you've done quite a bit in the last week, then. Fair to say?
Yes, that is fair to say.
Okay. Well, I can't promise you that I can stick to what I told you, then, for purposes of how long we may or may not be today. Let me do it this way from a broad stroke perspective. I'm going to cover, and I will and need to cover, what it is you looked at and done. But setting that aside for the moment, what you expressed, I guess, 5 broad stroke opinions last week, if you remember. The first one was Dr. Smith, you testified, fell below the standard of care, and you had various subparts as to why and how. And then we went on into the 4 other general opinions that you had. Have your opinions overall changed or been modified based upon whatever additional information you reviewed or discussed in this case?
With regard to the impact on this family of Dr. Smith and other Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital workers, they have been more deeply informed with regard to the trauma suffered by the girl and her father with regard to their impact in propelling the mother's taking her own life with regard to the following impacts on the child of the trauma, which have produced an acute and concerning medical set of consequences that derive directly, in my opinion, from the malfeasance of the staff of the hospital.
All right. That's a lot to digest, I think. Let me do it this way. What is it that you reviewed, and I'd like a specific deposition citation, part of a deposition, whatever, specific record. What is it that you reviewed that provides a basis for the additional or altered opinions you just expressed?
Sure. The deposition of Kathy Beatty, Volumes 1 and 2, on January 30th, 2020. The depositions of Dr. Catherine Major on October 30, 2019, and January 9, 2020. The deposition of Paola Dees, another physician, on May 10, 2019, and August 15, 2019. The deposition of Dr. Leah Bahar Posey, that's spelled L-A-L-E-H, and the last name is Bahar-Posey, on May 22, 2019, the deposition of Detective Stephanie Graham on November 18, 2019, the deposition of social worker Elaine Brown on March 19, 2019, then the deposition of social worker Deborah Hansen on June 5, 2019, and a set of other records, including affidavit of Sally Smith, the CV of Sally Smith, the Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital access log regarding Maya's medical records, the health risk assessment chart for child abuse and neglect, and the Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital physical child abuse clinical pathway.
Okay. And is that the sum total of the additional materials provided?
No. Substantial information was provided by Jack and Maya Kowalski, in our hour plus conversation with them on Sunday, and by Dr. Jack Wassenauer and my conversation with John Wassenauer, excuse me, on my conversation with him yesterday.
Okay. How long were you on the call with Dr. Wassenauer yesterday?
About a half hour.
Okay. And what was the purpose of that call?
I was interested in finding out about his overall take on the case and the nature of his involvement, and we talked about that. But the substance of the call had to do with his very recent visit with this girl who had, in the last year, lost 20 pounds and appeared to be having a medical crisis that conceivably put her life in danger. And we talked about that and the pediatric differential diagnosis and pathways to a deeper understanding of what was going on. And it was a productive and useful conversation. I was also informed by my previous conversation with Maya and her father.
Okay. Did Dr. Wassenaar enlighten you that he was just deposed within the last week, or his continuation of his deposition occurred within the last week?
I believe he mentioned that in the context of Maya's self-imposed exercise regime, but I don't recall if it was in that deposition or some other that he drew from to tell me about that.
Okay. I realize you actually had a chance to talk with him yesterday for approximately 30 minutes. Did you read his deposition transcript that was, you know, taken within the last week or so?
No, the deposition transcript I read was of January 8, 2020.
Okay. I've got a lot to kind of ask about this now. So you mentioned that through your discussion with Dr. Wassenaar, there was a reference to a relatively recent medical crisis, is what I heard you say regarding Maya.
Yes.
What was that?
Well, the main, and I'm just going off my notes. I did jot down a few notes. She appeared to him, on first appearance, someone he hardly recognized. She was wearing a huge sweater that obscured her body. She was pale, and she was emaciated. And as I mentioned, she had lost some 20 pounds. The reason for the visit was, or complaints, if you will, shortness of breath that raised the question immediately for a severely emaciated child about severely nutritional imbalance, or disturbance, rather, possibly self-imposed, possibly related to the antecedent traumatic experiences as, unfortunately, anorexia sometimes is. And so because anorexia can be fatal disease, shortness of breath may signify some cardiac failure. Dr. Wassenauer has extensive experience with anorexia, including very severe cases. And we talked about that, about what workup might entail and what it might be deriving from. Now, previously in my conversations with Jack and Maya Kowalski a few weeks ago on Sunday, I was able to understand more deeply the traumatic impacts of her experience at Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital and the enforced separation that it imposed on her mother and actually had in conversation noted with them that, as I was, to Jack and Maya's accounting of her evident avoidance of her numbing of obsessive involvement with her schoolwork, her mistrust of any medical person because it reminded her so of the adverse experience at Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital. It began to form in my mind the likely diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder, which I diagnosed on many occasions in the course of my career. I'm deeply familiar with that area of medical practice, and we talked about that specifically with regard to Maya's relentless focus on high achieving in her schoolwork. She's a highly intelligent child, but spends an inordinate amount of time doing her homework. And she says her family says they don't have her home. And she says her family say they don't have homework like this. Well, she applies herself with such diligence that she spends large amounts of every day. And this has been limiting the amount of contact she has with her friends. Further, it's also limited the amount of time that she could practice with the piano, which she appears to have great talent. This was actually noted at Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital when she played.
Doctor, if I could interject really quick. I'm going to let you finish, so Greg, don't worry about it. I do want to say this, though. We have a lot to cover now, and my question was about your conversation with Dr. Wassenaar, and somehow that's diverged into a discussion with Maya that I haven't even questioned about yet. I just, for your sake and the value of your time and everybody here, I'm going to just ask you very respectfully if you could listen to the question I ask and to the best of your ability answer that question. I will certainly follow up, and if it requires something else, let me know. But I just think something like this is going to make this deposition. I think we're going to get to 3 o'clock or 3:30 and realize we have to go to a day 3, and I don't want to do that if it's unnecessary to do so. So please feel free to finish if you think you need to the pending question.
Well, with respect and with regard to the pending question, it was important that Dr. Wassenauer and I review this information because it went to essential medical history with which he was contending with regard to this very serious contemporary diagnostic challenge. And I'm giving you this background by way of giving you my firsthand information that I was able to give Dr. Wassenauer for his consideration. But I'll complete my answer quickly by saying that. Unfortunately, this girl has music in her life, a piano teacher she loves, even though she's not able to practice as much as she would like. And I said, that's curious because I also studied piano when I was your age, actually. For your information, I studied piano at Juilliard School of Music till I was 16 when I stopped. And I had superb teachers, and I was pleased to hear that her teacher was not bothered by the fact she couldn't practice. And I was able to say, you know, I share this interest with you and didn't especially like practicing when I was your age, and it didn't bother my teacher too much. And then I kind of bonded with her about music, and we talked very productively about music, and I think to her relationship of trust that also enabled me to ask her and Jack about other more sensitive aspects of their life, which I then shared to Dr. Wassenauer. So Dr. Wassenauer was deeply concerned about these issues and how they might relate to the crisis that he was now dealing with regard to her health. And we talked about this in a substantive way. He's drawn the appropriate laboratories from his previous work with anorexia nervosa in young adolescents. Maya is now 14. He's familiar with the connections between PTSD and the onset of anorexia nervosa, if that's indeed what is going on now. And this is complicated further, and this is why it was important to relate back to that conversation. And my apologies for my long answer. If we were going to go another day, I want to be fully a participant, giving the information that the jury will want to know in this case. Her social isolation, her...
Wait, doctor, I'm going to have to ask you to stop. We are so far behind. I'm going to move to strike, I don't know, the last 5 minutes? This is a narrative, and I'm going to move to strike it. I need you to be able to move this depo along. So I appreciate your response. I'll follow up accordingly. I want to do this because I need to. I need to, and I will get to some of that. I anticipate maybe not today. The testimony you gave on September 22nd, a week ago, or a little over a week ago, the opinions you provided at that first day of the deposition, do those opinions still hold true?
Yes.
Okay. You told me that there's some modifications and maybe supplements, if you will, to those opinions, and you gave me in a broad stroke format a couple minutes ago. Are those the sum total, from a broad stroke standpoint, of the additional opinions you've arrived at in this matter?
Do you want to hear them?
Well, you gave them to me in a broad stroke. My question is, what you just gave to me, based upon these additional materials you've looked at, the modified opinions, the supplement opinions, however you want to phrase it, you gave them to me in a broad stroke already, and I'll get into them in a bit more detail in a moment, but were those the sum total of the broad stroke additional or modified opinions that you have?
I don't understand. I will tell you what those opinions, those supplemental attributes of the change of my opinions, if that's what you want to hear. Is that the question you're posing to me?
Let's go with that. Go ahead. But please, I'm asking you if you could just give them to me in a thumbnail version, and we'll take one at a time.
Sure. Well, Dr. Smith, from these new materials, it was evident to me had more than an instrumental role in directing the child's medical care than I had expected, reifying my impression that not only was she a member of this hospital staff and acting as one doing the acts I'm about to describe. First, Dr. Smith was observed by one of her colleagues, Dr. Kilgore, to have actually affixed a copy of a report to the hospital paper medical record, an action that would be unheard of by an outside consultant and would typically be done by a member of the hospital staff concerned to inform any and every person who picked up the paper medical record about her analysis or her own summary, which she's, you'll recall my testimony was highly selective, omitting certain vital information as she drove home her conclusion, which was a preconception that she dressed up as a conclusion, that there was overwhelming evidence that this child was a victim of Munchausen syndrome by proxy by affixing that to a paper record, which is the paper record is typically what physicians who are concerned to get a quick review of the past medical history
And this is just as the electronic medical records are coming into view, a source of tremendous frustration for most of the hospital physicians. So very frequently, paper record that contains, for example, a discharge summary. And we talked about that at my last deposition. And you recall Dr. Manager's indication.
Top of page 192. Okay, and who's Dr. Kilgore?
Another staff person at the hospital.
What is Dr. Kilgore a male or female?
I think she's female, but I don't recall.
What's her specialty, if any?
Yes, Dr. Kilgore is one of the general pediatric hospitalists at the hospital. Her first name is Christina. That would suggest that she's female.
Turning to page 200, line 4. What do you mean diagnostic impressions, doctor? What do you mean by that? Were you making diagnoses in this case?
Well, indeed, yes. I made the diagnosis after reviewing this and after talking with Jack and Maya of post-traumatic stress disorder. I'm competent to do that with this history and these guidelines. With regard to conversion disorders, which all of these physicians use casually, as Dr. Smith did, I wanted to be sure that I understood what the formal criteria for diagnosis of conversion disorders, as opposed to the, how to put it, superficial understanding that Dr. Smith used to contort an understanding of Maya's symptoms into psychiatric ones, as well as ones she believed by some magical process reified her mother's impression. So, for example, as I testified previously, her monitoring showed her attempting to move about in a room being characterized as a charade, her intercostal contractions when she was having an asthma attack being characterized by Dr. Smith as something that could be voluntary as opposed to autonomic, which couldn't be susceptible to voluntary control. So I also looked at that as well.
Okay.
I felt that it was important as well to examine the criteria in each example as delineated by DSM-5 so that the PTSD conversion disorder, factitious disorder imposed on another, in my consciousness that I was considering these issues in anticipation of a conversation with her treating pediatrician who is concerned about all of these processes.
Turning to page 205, line 17. You do not anticipate expressing opinions as a treating physician because you use the word diagnosis, and I have to be clear on that.
Correct. If I'm asked in my pediatric experience that this child is suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, I'll say yes, and I'll say why, and I've done this in other cases. I've written about this. I've had deposition testimony about this. I know this area very well from my research and effects on child abuse, of sexual abuse, and other traumatic situations on children. I am not a treating physician. I would not venture into any way saying that I'm a treating physician with regard to Maya.
Okay. And if, in fact, you were asked that question, is this child suffering from PTSD and why, your rationale is going to be based upon the things that you reviewed in your actual hour and 15 minutes or so in talking with her and her father. Is that right?
Well, it's more than that.
What else is there?
It's the information I have reviewed.
I just said that.
It's the
doctor, my question was, if you were...
It's the study I've made and the analysis that I've conducted of many elements that delineate, most importantly, with the diagnosis of PTSD, traumatic exposure, which is required in making this diagnosis. And the dramatic exposure in this case involves many dimensions, has many aspects. That's more than half an hour with Dr. Wassenaar in an hour and 15 minutes. It can't be broken down in a few minutes of time. It requires thought. It requires serious reflection.
Page 207, line 6. Right. Doctor, to be clear, I wasn't trying to be coy nor, you know, facetious. My point is you haven't treated Maya. You haven't, you know, other than spending that hour and 15 approximate with her and her father and the time with Dr. Wassenaar and whatever credentials and background training and experience you have, everything else you know about this case is based on what you've learned through either discussions with counsel or your review of the materials, correct? I mean, you don't have any direct experience with this child beyond that hour and 15. Fair enough?
No, yes.
Okay, thank you. Page 211, line 8. In paragraph 2, as I look at it, even from a cursory standpoint, the most recent date span that I see is an attending physician and adjunct in medicine, 2008 to 2019 at Boston Children's Hospital. Do you see that?
Yes.
What did it mean to be an adjunct? Because you were an attending from 1972 to 2000. I know what attending means. What does it mean when you're an adjunct in medicine between 2008 and 2019?
That means you're a physician on the staff whose office is not based at the hospital.
Okay, so between 2008 and 2019, we'll strike that. What did you do, if anything, between, say, 2000 and 2008? I mean, and by that I mean paragraph 2 says you were an attending from 1972 to 2000 and then an adjunct from 2008 to 2019. What, if anything, happened, or what was your position, if anything, between 2000 and 2008?
Well, it specifically had to do with my hospital and Harvard appointment. I was appointed at the highest level in the hospital-tiered hierarchy of physicians. I was the senior associate in medicine when I closed my office at the end of 1999. Around 2008, all physicians with hospital appointments of that nature had to go through a rigorous process of training to address hospital emergencies, had to wear a special badge to show that they had been trained, as I recall. And it was burdensome for me because I was outside the hospital and I was mainly coming in occasionally to teach at Harvard Medical School and to consult. So I no longer had that kind of, how to put it, need to be available for emergencies at the hospital. And that's the reason my role changed from senior associate in medicine to adjunct in pediatrics, as they called it. So it's as simple as that. It was administrative.
Okay, that makes sense.
So when that
title changed, 2008 through 2019, and you were officially adjunct in medicine, can you give me an idea as to what it is you would be doing? I mean, what did it mean in real time and from a daily standpoint as to your professional time that you were doing, if anything?
It was occasional teaching at Harvard Medical School and at Children's Hospital in keeping with the requirement for people who held university appointments. I was not a tenured member of the medical faculty. All through this time, I maintained my old academic title of assistant professor of pediatrics. In this interval, I don't know if I testified to this fact, but I had at one time a concern to recruit an endowed professorship, the incumbent of an endowed professorship. And I was asked if I wanted to throw my hat in the ring because Harvard, when they make such appointments, it has to conduct an international research. And I declined. At that point, I had a book coming out. After 30 years, I wanted to do something different with my life. So I indicated I no longer wanted to be involved in day-to-day management of cases of suspected child abuse, because not being on site, I would not be able to provide the level of supervision and involvement which such activity requires. But I indicated a willingness to conform my practice to Harvard's rules, where a certain number of hours per year would be given for academic work. And I maintained my association on the faculty in those terms until my wife and I moved full-time 2 years to the Western Massachusetts, where it was no longer possible for me to do that.
Between 2008 and 2019, the work you were putting in was more on the academic side. You were not actually involved in the trenches, if you will, on the day-to-day evaluation of suspected child abuse.
Yes.
Mr. Whitney, can you give us a preview of how much longer...
Yes, Your Honor. I think we're 3/4 of the way through.
Members of the jury, do we want to break now?
Oh, man.
No offense to the readers.
Do not discuss this case amongst yourselves. Do not do the investigation and receive no information. Let's try to keep it to 10, 15 minutes.
All right.
Cut this thing down.
Any issues? Are the jury's out of our presence? Any issues we need to address before we take our 10-minute break?
No.
Okay. And how long is the video portion of Dr. Neuberger going to be?
30 minutes.
Okay. Okay. Well, we'll see everybody in about 10 minutes.
More live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today is coming up. Press subscribe now.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? they're also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
ChumbaCasino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
Ryan Seacrest here. So every great barbecue takes a little patience. And while the food does its thing, you can enjoy a little Chumba Casino. The perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play. Only at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.